I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to ride, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value.
And we're back for the third and final hour with the amazing, fabulous and ever so intricate Paul Webster. Welcome back.
I've been described worse.
Now, there was one particular funny thing about England that occurred to me and my mates the other day. We did a song about it. I won't play it because it's terrible. But there's actually a people in England, I'm aware, known as Scouse.
Yeah, man. My roots are in Scouse land.
Now, what is it like being Scouse?
Just like any other traditional type thing that you've grown up with. There's a lot of bad press about Liverpool, but you get bad press about all the inner cities now. And, you know, there are generations of youth and that have nothing. You know, they're given nothing. So there's reputations that are forged, but there's one thing about these people is, in my experience, the humour, the ability to be able to laugh through times of absolute, you know, devastation. The stories are rife through the history. It's just everybody's lost their way a little bit now. I mean, at the moment, I've been looking at some... I joined a site which has put old photographs of where I'm from. And some of them dating back to the 1700s. And how this place has changed, not for the better, I might add. You know, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. Don't get me wrong, there was... the pit estates, you know, the council estates, where you got the hard-working labourers who didn't have much of education in those days. And you see how much things have changed. And when you look around, it's not for the better. And the thing is that the Scouse accent is very hard to understand when you get into the proper inner-city stuff. You know, there's some that they do sound like they're talking on static all the time with... all this kind of stuff, but you know, it's an accent that I've always been able to, and don't get me wrong, there are some I can't understand, but because I've grown up, I'm not a Scouser as such, but I'm like most of my family are Scouse, so you get to, at family dues and that, you get to know what the type of humour is and the banter, and you know, if you can walk through Liverpool city centre with a smile on your face and have a, you know, I threw a few sarcasm things out, you'll be welcome there. You know, the majority, as in everywhere, the majority are good people. It's just that we are promoted with the bad side of it. And unfortunately, as you get into the inner cities these days, it is getting bad. You know, people are losing hope. You can only take so much off someone. And then there's nothing left to take. And, you know, it's not about making excuses for people, because people can and should pull themselves up to better climates. But, you know, if that's what you know, if that's what you've learned, and you've never had the opportunity to learn anything else, it does, you know, one man's experience is totally different to another man's. Even if we walk down the same street together, I don't see what you see and I don't feel what you feel. It's all about the experience and the social engineering that's gone on over the decades. It's essential that they lost the generations. I mean, I remember all the music and all that being taken over. And when I look back at the promotions of this different type of music, and I just accepted it for people who were just making songs, who were expressing themselves in music and words. So different songs meant different things, different bands meant different things, different people were expressing their own opinions. When you look back at seeing that has been manipulated, and now you see people like Miley Cyrus, who's meant to be a role model for 7-year-old kids, doing what she does on a stage. You know what I mean? At 7-year-old,
it's enough to...
My daughter didn't even know what she wanted for breakfast, never mind to dance about doing stuff like that, because kids are kids, but there's something been lost, Vinny, over the last 2 or 3 generations.
It's enough to break Daddy's achy, breaky heart.
Isn't it just, if he wasn't just a prick as well, you know, it's very easy to get lost in this system, but if you look at the people who are in the system, they're broke. They're broke as anything.
Yeah.
You know, something like Britney Spears, the stuff that she's gone through, and now she's promoting herself as being all well and this, that and the other again, there's just something sick. You know, there's something sick about that environment. You know, I always remember a guy called Dave Chappelle, a comedian, who made it quite big. He was a friend of Martin Lawrence's. And he said Martin Lawrence, who has come from the ghetto with him, gone through some tough times, gang members, all that kind of stuff, guns, and made it to the big time. He's out in the street in his boxer shorts wielding a gun because they're saying, they're out to kill me, they're out to kill me. He said, what kind of a sick environment does that to somebody who has come through tougher times? Maybe it's not him that's lost his mind, maybe it's the environment that is sick.
Yeah.
And if you look at the environments that people grow up in, if you grow up in a sick environment, you are going to be promoted to be sick. Whether you like that or not, it's very easy for somebody on the outside of that to say, well, they should have done this, they should have done that. I managed to go out and get a job. Well, your experience wasn't quite like it. And for the people who do drag themselves out of that, all the more power to you, because that takes a hell of a character to take yourself from something like that to something better. Not everybody is that motivated. Not everybody's here to be that motivated. Some people are here meant to be part of the problem, because if you couldn't find the people who are part of the problem, then how would you ever fix anything if you'd ever even know anything was wrong? The fact is, for many decades, we've not known that there's anything wrong. Yet, they're making this big push now where they're starting to batten down everything down, so it's getting more and more blatant. But we're learning every day. These people learn every day as well.
Do you feel that people can define themselves and what they're for by what they're against? Like, let's say, for example, you're against tyranny. Does that mean that you're for freedom?
I suppose so. But see, one man's tyranny is another man's freedom. So you get dragged into the argument of just because... you've not got a dictator that's being tyrannical, that's a visible one, it's very easy to disguise that. And we're in such a society that it's being disguised, not anymore, thankfully, but it's being disguised through your own consent. That's the biggest travesty of it all. These people sit back and laugh at us all day long, and they are actually doing and getting away with things now that 20 years ago they wouldn't have even tried, because this system wasn't so much under that control. This has been an incremental thing.
Well, I've got this opinion that actually the system was under their control in the first place, but they didn't want to use what powers they had in order to take everything over instantly, because they believed that it would be better to play a slow game and move in for the kill and get the knife around your throat before they even realise that you're there.
Well, definitely, because it's like the frog in the boiling water. If you throw a frog into boiling water, it jumps straight out. But if you put it into cold water and turn the heat up incrementally, the frog doesn't even know it's boiling to death.
It makes you a more efficient killing machine, isn't it?
Yeah. And we have a society now that has been broken in so many ways, mentally, physically in some aspects of the country,
spiritually.
Yeah. And the mechanisms for all that control are now falling to pieces.
Can I say something? I had a very important thought the other day with a couple of friends of mine. I shared this with them. Mental, physical, spiritual. Those are the three aspects of the things that define the human condition. You know, those are your three compulsions. Is it physically compelling? Is it spiritually or intellectually compelling? You know. And I had a brainwave. I thought, hold on a second. What if you build something in the physical world that doesn't? It's not part of your body or anything. You build something, but it actually gives you physical well-being, mental well-being, and spiritual well-being.
Yeah,
you know, it's possible to do that, isn't it? With inventing objects. And so something hit me. You can actually make real things that can influence the entire spectrum of what it is to be human. And I think that that is actually the most powerful thing that we're capable of doing, is we're capable of bringing things from our mind into reality, and then it pings back and it affects everything. Right?
Yeah.
You build a system, you build an invention, a piece of technology or something like that, that it starts to have a ripple effect. Now, I was thinking about this in terms of, say, my radio show. We have important discussions like the ones we've been having tonight here. And what occurs to me is that I'm creating that physical resource for people perpetuity, you know, hopefully, to absorb this information and to listen to it and review it and help them inspire new thoughts and things like that. Yeah. So in a very real sense, I'm making an impact of sorts on the mental, physical, and spiritual fabric of society.
Of course, because you provide a medium, you provide that platform. I mean, believe it or not, Vinny, you know, I wouldn't actually class it as viral, but over 2,000 people saw that video I did with you.
Mm.
And friends and family were, you know, they were quite shocked with what I was talking about. I got a lot of compliments, even though that's not what I'm fishing for. I don't need compliments. I want people to understand that through things happening to me, I have learned stuff. I don't say that I've got the answers, but I'm saying there's a damn good valid point here. If this was a local business that was taking taxes from the people and using the court system, stuff like that, if you recall, America went through all that and still going through it with corrupt police departments, judiciary. And people are just having money taken from them. Now, that's always happened to us. But we've fought against it. But somehow, in this country, we've been sideswiped. It's like everybody was just put to sleep in a mass hypnosis all at one point. Because I look back at history, some history documents, and even some, maybe not, that like working class people like myself or lower classes than myself, people knew about this stuff. People knew how it worked. People understood politics. And we've been... I mean, if somebody had said to me, here's a DVD on contract law 10 years ago, Vinny, I'd have said, are you mad? Harry Potter's on tonight? You know, it wouldn't have occurred to me until you see how this system works and how it affects you and where you stand in it. And the most important thing is where you stand in it. This system is big enough to shoot one person down and take everything from them. But more and more people are doing this because they have no choice. People would not choose to go and take this system on. I'm convinced nobody would, or very few anyway. But if you work damned hard for your house and then you find out that somebody who's trying to take it from you refuses to prove the claim by showing you a bill of exchange that they must still be in possession of to claim that you owe that amount. If they haven't got that to produce, then they've sold it, and if they still can't produce it, then the mortgage is void. That's how the system's meant to work, but the collusion that goes on is they'll turn case law over. You cannot be heard. They don't want you to win in either court. They keep the common law court away from you, send you into county court, and then send you chasing bits of paper. And all the meantime, you're looking at the goal, but they've moved the goalposts, and you're looking in the wrong direction.
Well, and also you think that certain authorities are meant to be there to police the other authorities in a way? Like if you got a problem with this guy, you can go complain to that guy and he deals with them and fires them, or there's some form of recompense, right? But there isn't. Because they're on the take. And that's the real issue here, I think, is a root of corruption, like a tulip bulb, something just beneath the surface that has this beautiful flower on top, and it looks really nice and looks really official, but there's actually just basically a dead poison seed in the earth that you can't see that needs to be dug out, like any weed. And here's the question, ultimate paradox. How do you get justice in a system where the people you're trying to get justice on are the justice system?
That is my question exactly. That is what I'm trying to find out. I mean, like I said, when I tried to report this to the police told me that they wouldn't give me a crime number because it's a civil matter. If I take some property from you, Vinny, claim that I have the right to sell it and then sell it to somebody, then that is fraud. That's criminal. You have stolen something from me. If that was my car, the police would be straight round and arrested you. So what is the difference between property? None. It's because the court system and the judges and the solicitors and the corporations are involved. Mm. So they tell the police that it's civil. If a policeman got a solicitor involved, he would tell you it was a civil matter.
You know what's ironic is that there's really nothing civil about it, is there?
And not anymore. I mean, it is quite civil, you know. They do speak very nicely to each other, but it's in terminology that doesn't mean what you think it means. And you could spend years. These people do this for 4 or 5 years to learn all these legalese and the civil rules procedure rules.
It's kind of like when you get those letters from an employer or somebody you're hoping to get a good news from or something like that, and then they start the letter with this word, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've seen a few of them.
You suddenly know what the rest of the letter's going to contain. And the irony is, they make a fortune off of your misfortune.
Yep, and if they don't create your misfortune, they certainly perpetuate it. And if you stand up against them, they're going to do everything to put you down because they don't want you to win. They can't allow you to win.
Mm.
But they've got to a point now where people have chipped away at them. People have got them from all these kinds of arguments. So if you're suddenly one gun against three people with guns, and then all of a sudden you have now 300 people against the three people with guns, the three people with guns need to start either trying to renegotiate or blend into the people who are already there or do one. And what they're doing now is they're trying to do one, but the fact is they don't want you in court. They just, at the moment, they're keeping me out of court. They're doing their best to keep me out of court, because if I got him in court, he would have to answer how he's managed to sell the property. And it would be because he claimed to the buyer that I didn't turn up at the last hearing, and they were granted power of attorney. Well, that hearing never happened because I was at the last hearing and it was a foreclosure hearing, nothing to do with grants of power of attorney. So how's he sold the house? He hasn't. He sold it fraudulently and then tried to pay me, which would give my implied consent to the sale. And the judge, in my opinion, is helping him, aiding him, facilitating, whatever word they want to use. And if you look at facilitate, it does have a definition for fraud. So the judge is actually playing the game. These people must have their hands dirty, I'm convinced of it, because like I said, the judge that was in charge originally got switched 10 minutes before, after that question of jurisdiction was asked.
Mm.
And for me, that's where you now see people who are in the syndicate that you referred to.
What that reminds me of is almost every action movie that you've ever conceived of, where the bad guy suddenly realises he's got a really dangerous good guy on his hands here, and he calls in his chief assassin or head henchman or something like that to go take him out, isn't it?
Or armed response, yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's the problem, and again, another paradox, the show of force. They're willing to use force, yet we can't, because if we do, we'll be completely overwhelmed right away. And nobody wants any domestic insurrection or wars or bloods running in the street or anything of that nature. The problem is, if it ever come to come some kind of an uprising, who would fire first and who would the propaganda machine support? This is the question that I'm starting to wonder myself is, what kind of tactics would be used to subvert the media sensation around some kind of an intellectual awakening? Now, as we see so far, it is, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. That seems to be working quite well. It's a old trick, and it still works quite well. They throw patriotism at you. Well, hey, you know, you're an American. You've got American problems. I'm from New Zealand. I've got New Zealand problems. So, you know, we'll just keep to ourselves, and we'll fight for our own freedom, and so on and so forth. Actually, bro, we're all being enslaved simultaneously at the same time. It's kind of like we're all fish trapped in one net. Have you ever seen the movie Finding Nemo? And at the end, one of the fish gets trapped in a net with all these other fish, and they tell them all just to swim down. And the weight of all the fish, of New Zealand accent coming out there, like fish and chips. with all the weight of all the fish swimming down together, it actually broke the net off and they all managed to go free. And I think that's quite an amazing analogy to think about what we're dealing with here on a global level, is that you can't just get rid of the corruption in the court or the political spectrum or the media or any of the systems one at a time. I think that
it's all the same thing. That's why it's so good that everybody's coming from different angles.
Some
people are attacking the media and exposing them. Some people are exposing the police. There's a guy who I know who's actually taken a criminal conviction to the high courts against two Metropolitan Police officers who acted unlawfully. It's quite simple how this stuff works. It's just people think, because like a bailiff thinks, because they've got a shape of a crown stamp on a document, that gives them authority, and it doesn't. And when I got one of the occasions where I knew the gas people were coming with a warrant to put in a pay-as-you-go meter. Now, the fact is, they can only apply for a warrant of entry under a health and safety issue. The guy ended up stating in court that it was a monetary dispute and not health and safety, because they checked the supply when they read the meter. So therefore, we were in the wrong jurisdiction, being in the magistrate's court, asking for a warrant, because you need to substantiate that bill. You can't hold a piece of paper up that you claim I owe you when I put legal documents in with acts and statutes that state this is how I paid it, and you just stick your fingers in your ears and say I'm not talking to you, and you won't give it to a legal team. So you start seeing this stuff to work. And I got home this one day, and I gets out of the car, and as I'm walking forward to go and speak at the edge of my property, because I pulled up in the car, I was on the way home from work, goes to the edge of the property, and I'm met by six policemen, a locksmith, a warrants officer, and a gas fitter, all ready to break in my house. Now, I had somebody in the house who prevented entry. When I got there, before I could speak, a policeman said to me, "You're going to have to let him in, mate. He's got a warrant." And I turned to the policeman and said, "Are you here acting as peacekeeper or bailiff today?" And he went, "Oh, we're just here to keep the peace." I said, "Then your opinion's not warranted." So I turned to the warrants officer and said, "I'm standing under common law. This is civil jurisdiction. There is a dispute going on with British Gas, and I have got paperwork in, and this account is in dispute, so you need to leave this right now." And I said, "If you try and gain entry to my property, I will remove you from this property by any means necessary, with no more force than necessary." Right? The police have nothing to say to that, because they knew I was right. They knew I was right on the common law. I could remove him from my property. And he never tried to gain entry. And they went, threatened me with this warrant lasts for 21 days. I got on the phone to British Gas and said, "If you don't," just told me, "if you don't stop this warrant, when without answering these questions. And obviously, once you put a dispute on the account, they can't chase you for money until the dispute's resolved. But British Gas, E.ON, name any of the big companies that you like, Scottish Power, these have computer-generated letters that just say, oh, that bill's not been paid in as far as our records are concerned. Right, we now go to this next stage. So computer-generated letters sent out with a computer signature on it. Don't even know if that person exists in real terms. Says, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Eventually, it gets to the stage where they apply for a warrant. And despite me having two warrants already thrown out last year, and me asking for a summer bill, a separate summer bill, and a separate autumn bill, so that I can pay my gas bill, they've decided to ignore me. They won't engage with me, Vinny. I've faxed headquarters. I've recorded delivery things to people. I even went against my own rules and rang India up or wherever the company's based. Do you know what? They had to email the UK about my dispute. They had to email the UK to explain about my dispute because they couldn't do anything. So that's what you're up against. Basically, if I got somebody legally trained, the only thing they could say to me is, you haven't paid that bill because you've not done the bill of exchange correctly. Well, if you're legally trained, you can see my intention is honourable. I want to pay this through that bill of exchange, which is payable under the Bill of Exchange Act and the Consumer Credit Act, because it's a domestic property. Show me how to do it correctly. As soon as they show me how to do it correctly, boom, done. But they won't put anybody legally trained in front of you. And that is the system that... This comes back to double dipping. They started double dipping at first, because when they first introduced this, a lot of people would sign that liability check and send it back with the bill and their payment. Well, you paid, like, say, £400 for your gas bill, but you've signed a check for £400 as well. So you've just paid them £800, some in your own cash and some in your credit. So they've been making money hand over fist. No wonder they're making billions.
Well, no wonder they're seizing control and ownership over everything worldwide. The Midas touch, you know, you can turn anything into gold, something of value, by simply touching it. And I think that's what these people do. They come at anything with the Midas touch, turn it into some gold for themselves.
Yeah. And we've been asleep long enough to help them do it. And because we do help them do it. They've done nothing illegal. But that doesn't mean anything when you realise that Hitler did nothing illegal either. Everything was made legal. The passports, the papers, the people being spirited away under certain acts, that what we talked about before, his own party being slaughtered, the Reichstag fire setting, you know, to pass legislation to start arresting people. You know, you see all this stuff has happened in history, and it's only a bit of reading. I tell people to, you know, it's the omnibus of your soap on Sunday, and spend half an hour spend half an hour researching something that's concerning you, because there's not one aspect of your life this doesn't affect. Not one aspect. You know, if you're obsessed with football, you're telling me you can't realise why these players are paid the kind of money to keep you entertained in such a way, to keep you distracted. You don't understand that. That's anathema to me.
I hate watching rugby, and one time I decided I'd put myself through a rugby game, and I decided that I'd make it fun by counting the amount of advertisements that I saw in a non-commercially interrupted broadcast. I saw 87 advertisements.
You must have been really bored at that rugby game.
Yeah. I mean, if I wanted to see men struggling to score for over an hour, I'd just go to a bar.
Yeah. Well, it's the same over here. We have rugby, we have football, we have cricket. You know, we're not very good. Oh, well, I won't say we're not very good at any of them, but we're always nearly there. You know, and the only sport I obsess with has always been football.
Yeah.
You know, I absolutely... I could talk about football for ages. I mean, obviously I've got a bigger scope to talk about things now because that's more important. But I still love my football. My team drew today instead of winning and we didn't play well. And it does still put that little bit of a dampener. But at the end of the day, it is just a game. Yeah. But the fact is, I cannot justify going paying the kind of prices to watch these people play with beautiful skills, play a beautiful game. But the reason they're paid this kind of money, it's not about just a game anymore. It's about a distraction. It's about promoting people. It's about revenue. You know,
Have you ever noticed that a lot of the elections always take place during massive sports kind of competitions?
Yeah, because they want to link you into everything. You know, it must be cool if David Cameron attends a football match, it must be cool. You know, it must be for the people. Jesus.
Yeah, it was quite funny. In New Zealand, we had the Rugby World Cup, I think, in, 2008, I believe, or it might have been 2012. I forget because I don't care. I just don't care. And it was funny, though, because I remember the election turnout, and it was the lowest election turnout since 1886, before women even had the ability to vote.
It just tells you that people realise, at the very least, at the very lowest point, people realise that it's not worth voting for, because you're just voting for whatever it is that's going to be against you. Mm. They know what's coming. Mm. They don't just put somebody in charge and give them nothing. It's carefully selected. People are definitely selected. You have maybe three people to choose from. If they have control of those three parties, then if there's a nefarious undertone to any of it, then you've lost, because you just it's best of the devil, you know. Well, no, not really. I'd rather not have the devil.
I'd rather the troublemaker. If somebody's been thrown out of parliament before, that gives them credibility to my eyes, because they're willing to say something that will get them thrown out of parliament. You know what I'm saying? Somebody to at least throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in the works, and at the very least make it a hell of a lot more entertaining to watch.
Well, the thing is, that's what we actually need. If there are genuine people still left at the higher levels, it's down to them to actually at least say something, if they are these honourable people. If they're not dirty, if there's nothing that people have got on them, or they're just completely into the lifestyle, then they've got to start whistleblowing. And the fact that you see laws, or legislation, I should say, trying to be passed to prosecute whistleblowers, because they're already trying to prove them guilty through the media, you can see an agenda's being pushed there.
Mm.
If you've got somebody who's going to get punished for speaking the truth or attempting to shed light on the truth, then you have a tyranny. It's a self-definition.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I thought of what you're saying that there about whether or not you've got something on you in terms of eternal blackmail. I believe MK Ultra in the United States, run by the CIA, had a couple of nice rooms set up, and they had their mind control subjects who would be trained as sex kittens or whatever to lure congressmen, senators, influential people and what have you into these rooms, so that they could film and record them having these perverse sexual encounters with their operatives, and in order to blackmail them into passing and or supporting certain pieces of legislation. And I'm aware that MI5 was recently in the headlines. I can't remember this specifically, but apparently there's some kind of big blackmail list or what have you on massive celebrities in England. And something like that. Like, what's his name? Jimmy Savile, for example. The Queen has MI5 clear everybody for a knighthood, right? And apparently there have been a number of people with knighthoods that have been implicated in major pedophile rings. And allegedly Jimmy Savile was even involved even getting children into Buckingham Palace for the royals to use. but that's unsubstantiated.
Alleged, yeah.
Yeah, and what occurs to me, though, is that it seems to fit the pattern. Because when I think of corruption, when I think of debauchery, when I think of lack of morality, what occurs to me is that there's different levels on it based upon the power that you have in order to wield it and or cover it up. So if you're just some poor, broke psychopath on the streets or something like that, some of the worst things that you can do is you can maybe rape a child, kill a person, steal their money or weasel them out of a deal or something. But if you're a billionaire psychopath, the amount of hunger that you must have to reach even greater levels of scumbaggery must be absolute, and therefore would it be of no surprise to me to learn that the most powerful and influential and wealthiest people in the world would be engaged in the most horrific acts, albeit maybe even on a freaking regular basis for all we know.
Well, that, like I said, that's something that, as this stuff starts coming out, you can see it's coming out in the mainstream media that there's something linked with paedophilia every other day, if not every day, and politicians from yesteryear and even today are being implicated. People talk about it going right back to number 10 Downing Street, and there's quite well-known information, be it circumstantial evidence right now, that show that this stuff has and that is going on. I mean, there's a guy called, are you aware of a guy called Kevin Annett?
It rings a dingleberry to me.
It's the ITCC, it's the International Court.
Oh, them! Ha ha!
Yeah. The International Court. Now, apparently there's a warrant out for the arrest of Elizabeth Windsor.
Hmm.
And this court was held in Malaysia, with three judges, a jury, all the parties were serviced and invited to come and attend, and it was to do with the procurement of 10 Aboriginal children from Canada in 1964. The Royal Party allegedly turned up, took 10 kids out for the day, but those kids were never seen again. And these people claim to have evidence that they have been part of genocide and all this other kind of stuff. And they found them guilty in an international court. They found the Pope guilty. Ratzinger, they found him guilty. He resigned the day after. Synchronicity, coincidence, whatever you want to call it.
Well, it seems like a snowball effect to me.
Yeah, and it's coming from all different angles. You've got people who are doing stuff like that. You've got the UCC filings, which are it's very complicated stuff. It makes sense, but it's getting it heard. That is the point. That ICC stuff is going to come into the play somewhere down the line, but it's not going to get you to where you want to get right now, because they're defending that system for their lives. They know. From the very low levels, you know, when a ship starts to sink, the rats try to get to the top, and the ones at the top will not allow them. Mm. So people will get burned. You will see people put through the ringer for this to try and deflect stuff.
Yeah, pieces of meat, you know, hung out for public display. Look at him, he did it all. Don't talk about me, though, you know, I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, don't look over here, look over there, That's basically what it all is.
Yeah.
And that's how childish the arguments become over it.
Yeah.
It's become to a childish argument.
You've got to get to this eternal vigilance point. Like, have you ever had somebody lie to you, like, straight to your face kind of thing, and you just let it go? You know that they're lying to you, but you just let it go? What if you didn't let it go? What if every single time they bring out some kind of piece of meat for public display, you go, hey, who's getting off as a result of this guy not getting off? What if he had this eternal suspicion, this eternal vigilance? It'd be pretty difficult. And I think it's impossible to weed corruption entirely out of a society without an equal and opposite tyrannical police state to enforce it, really. And as we all know, enforcement doesn't normally go after the real big bad people who are actually hurting human beings, right? They normally go after the people who are trying to save them.
That's why it's coming down to you, us, me, I. It's you. If you you know, you can bring wonderful quotes from history back at all these cases. And Gandhi said that be the change that you want in the world. Well, you on your own, you might think you're very insignificant, but you change your world and the world will change. It's a natural process. You start bringing things like quantum physics into it where, you know, it's being shown now that the matter that surrounds us through light information, photons and frequency, that's all we interpret. This is all around us. And we interpret it through these five senses. This is about a consciousness. If your consciousness is kept in a little box where you vote Labour because your dad did, and you've never gone, wow, Labour are a bunch of scumbags, then you've never expanded your consciousness on that level. I can't get enough information, Vinny. I want to know everything because I feel that I'm a strong enough person to be able to differentiate my own opinion from something of what is being given to me in an agenda. And I've had long enough of that agenda where I've been asleep, and once you wake up, you can't go back to paying your way in a system that is designed to steal from you. I wouldn't be the man that I wanted to be, and certainly not the man my mum would have wanted me to be. It's all about truth at the end of the day and justice. If I'd have made mistakes and took a solicitor in and lost this house, then I could blame myself. But to do the legwork and find out that, hang on a minute, you can't do this. But hang on a minute, you're doing it anyway. That's how simple it is. If you could, like I said, you could spend 4 or 5 years learning the civil procedure rules, go into the court and be very confident and to fight them at their own game. But when you don't need to be there, because they have no authority to enforce anything on you without your consent, why would you? That is the argument. But the fact is, they won't let you into court to have that argument because they can't hear you.
So, oh my God. It reminds me of so many conversations I've had with people who are real hardcore supporters of New Zealand political parties, who, when I start talking about the truth about how their political party actually stands on really crucial issues, they don't and cannot argue and walk away.
Yeah. It's because people have a rhetoric. People pick up opinions, and everybody has other people's opinions inside them. But the one key opinion is what you truly believe. I mean, you could tell me your belief in whatever you want, and I would go, oh, right, okay, that's your belief. But I don't know where you've got your information. I don't even know if that's your real belief. You know, you take people at face value, but at the end of the day, it's still only information. Some bell end can't take some information and try and do something ridiculously stupid, and because he might have looked at Alex Jones or anything like that, blame and demonise Alex Jones because of this one nutter. Yet that's what you see.
Yeah.
You see that all the time. Well, that one nutter is exactly what it is. It's a nutter. You don't tar me with that brush. Mm. I've done my research. I certainly don't. I'm not a placard waver, Vinny.
Yeah.
I'm an aggregator of information. I like to talk about it. I like to get people into conversation.
You might be an aggregator of information. I'm just an aggravator of information to a large degree. And I am a bit of a placard waver, a megaphone loud hailer.
What we need. We need everybody like that.
I think it's like, you know, in the human body, how you got all these different organs doing all these different functions and what have you, and if one of the organs fails, everything's freaking kaput. I think that's how we actually kind of work as a movement and a society and what have you. It's just we've all just got to play our parts, you know. I think it's like if 7 different people tell you the same thing, your belief structure on something will change, allegedly. It doesn't mean that you tell the one person the same thing 7 times. That's what really frustrates a lot of people who are trying to wake others up, is that actually you can't do it by yourself. You can, however, play your part. And that's all you have to do. That's all your responsibilities are. I mean, what do you think? Did you cause the entire world's problems by yourself? no, then why try and take responsibility for solving all the world's problems by yourself? Take responsibility for the problem that you're in and solve it, and as a result, you will actually, well, hopefully teach others how to solve those problems in their own lives, and hopefully inspire some form of individual responsibility and have people stop conforming to what authorities want of them. Because the only way that the human race is actually ever going to develop is if everybody starts to learn how to develop themselves without being told how to develop. Okay? How do you know if you're under mind control? If you've never questioned whether or not you're under mind control.
Exactly. I question everything, and the thing is, if you wanted to try and be over analytical of this, if you realise that when you came into this world, your biggest teachers are obviously your parents, and you can have those biggest lessons with your parents or in the absence of one or both parents, it doesn't matter, your learning begins from those parents. They give you something of a foundation. That could be a lack of foundation, or it could be a really solid foundation. But then you go into an environment that we now know is being controlled, the education system. And the best thing that they ever did was train us to keep each other in check by ganging together in tribal gangs and saying, I like Liverpool, I hate United, and vice versa. And then it's because you're too fat, you're too thin, you've got shit trainers. So you've got all this stuff that you're growing through, and it's hard to try and find any truth in that, because you find things and people that you do want to put a belief in. Fortunately, I didn't get any dogma attached to me through a religion. My mum apparently was Methodist, my dad was Church of England. But what that meant to me was I went to a certain school. You know, even though I've read religion and I've obviously we had to do it at school, but it was cartoon characters for me at that stage. It was boring. I wasn't interested in this rubbish, and it was because it was religion. It was rubbish. It wasn't spiritual. The teachings of all the religions that are now in fights with each other or in dispute with each other, fundamentally at the damn core, is love. It all teaches love. It's just been taken control of, and it's been indoctrinated, and people think that they've got to go somewhere to say prayers or whatever on a certain day at a certain time. That is a control aspect. And for me, the best thing for me was when things start getting stripped down, when you start having these attacks on you and everything, it's like the army breaks somebody into pieces. Now, from that, you can mould them into whatever you like. Some people aren't strong enough to go through these breakdowns.
It's called trauma-based mind control. You know how they do it? Sleep deprivation and silo mentality. Group punishment, all right? And that way, you lose your individuality, you lose your ability to think, and then you get told, this is the person you now have to follow, now that you're no longer an individual, and you can't think for yourself because you're too freaking tired. Does the medical profession and law students ever complain about a lack of sleep? And do they ever somehow react to protect their entire profession when you critique one little bit of it? It's because they, too, just like a soldier, have been subjected to trauma-based mind control because they're trying to insert and program them with something. Something that prevents them, intellectually speaking, from having an individual idea to a large degree and standing up for what is right against what the collective punishment ideal would instill in them.
Exactly. I mean, it's when you speak to some solicitors, and like I said, the solicitor who I spoke with for at quite a length, he said to me at the end of that conversation that in 27 years he hadn't heard anything ever like that, that I had spent an hour coaching him on the difference between legal and lawful, and he advised me to go and get my degree and become a solicitor. And I said to him, I said, I would rather keep hold of my soul, thank you very much. No, he took it as I meant it, which was a joke, because he is a negotiator. But he thinks that this court, he really thinks this court has authority because of the civil procedure rules, and that's all they are rules. And as with rules, if you don't consent to the rule, then how can they enforce it? They can, because it's a rule. And the more and more rules that are passed, the more and more ridiculous they are becoming. Yeah. I mean, over in this country now, they're trying to pass legislation to stop kids running in playgrounds. Now, what's the point to that?
Yeah.
What's the point?
It's just this over-micromanagement, you know.
Exactly. I mean, but this is how quickly it's changed, isn't it? Late 70s, early 80s, something like that, I was in the school playground, and there was several stacks of iron bars stacked up in the corner of the playground. In the playground, no health and safety in those days and all this rubbish, one of those bars got pushed over and it put a hole in the leg. Now, one time did I ever hear my mother or father say, we're going to sue the school. They accepted it as an accident and moved on. That was the society then. Then in the mid to late 80s came in, word was blamed, there's a claim, where the American system had shown how they could expand this trough and let all the little piggies come and have a bit as well. You know, they're not very good solicitors. The ones who were just cutting the teeth, the ones who were going to have to prove themselves to get dirty, to get promoted to a judge.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are not going up this system. Don't get me wrong, I can't say everybody, but this system, you are not going to get promoted to the highest.
If you're still a good person, yeah.
Yeah, without being a little bit of dirt on your hands.
Yeah. And you may not even be doing anything illegal. However, just because something's illegal doesn't make it moral, all right? Yeah. There are things that you just do to somebody which is really unfair, and it's a raw deal, but it's legal. And yeah. I think Mark Passio talked about, and two favourite words of mine since, is moral obligation. What do you have a moral obligation to do? Is it to, I don't know, kick innocent people out of their homes and onto the street? Is it to starve out poor families? Is it to enact legislation that decreases the amount of education that people seem to go through so they're incapable of knowing their own rights or even what it is to be human? What is your moral obligation? What is it that you're trying to contribute to society here? I find myself asking myself this constantly because I'm always worried that I'll become so full of myself that I'll forget what I'm here to do.
That's possible. I've seen a lot of it. That's what seems to create a lot of the arguments, these egos. Now, you know, if you've got an ego and you get into this type of stuff and you're wanting to have a bit of fame and a bit of recognition because you're lacking in something inside yourself that you need that boost, you need to be put on that pedestal, then you're almost as part of the problem because you're a very useful tool to muddy waters when people are genuinely trying to find the right answers. In the same way that if you're going down the stream of information with everybody else and you get snagged on a rock and then all of a sudden you say, no, this is it, and we're all moving forward saying, we can't help you, you need to come with us, you need to come and look at other stuff. That's just more knowledge. That's an argument for another day. But people say this works, this is the only way it works. Mm. And that is one of the reasons why they managed to catch so many people out. Like the stuff where I was talking about, the prepaid account. We know that it exists, but we can't prove it. If you go into a court and say, I've got a prepaid account, the only thing the judge needs to say to you is, what's the account number? And you suddenly sound like Hugh Grant. Because you can't answer the question. And it's the same with the argument of, if you just go in and use an argument of, my signature creates that money. The question is, well, why did you go to the bank? Why didn't you just sign a piece of paper and go and buy your house? So your arguments have got to be correct, but we wouldn't be halfway near where we are now if those people hadn't gone with those arguments and tried them and failed, because we learn from that. It's a mixture of stuff. You've got to know something about the stuff, but like I said to you last on the last show, Vinny, I'm standing on the shoulders of giants in this arena. I haven't come along and suddenly picked up a torch or put a kilt on and painted my face and shouted freedom. That's not what I've done. This has all come after me. So I've researched and I've taken information from many, many, many different facets.
Mm.
And you put together what feels right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's actually a good positive place to leave it. Now, Paul, do you have a website or a Facebook contact or something of that nature that you can give out to the listeners?
I haven't, no. I have got a website, but it's
still a Paul Webster site.
It's still under construction. Like I said, Vinny, I don't have chance to get... Like, I was thinking of maybe doing some kind of a podcast for myself, but I'm spending so much time researching this stuff right now. It takes up a lot of my time when I'm not at work.
Mm.
So to try and fit anything else in, it's difficult, but to be able to get a chance to get on a platform where more people are seeing me on an international radio, so it doesn't matter how big, how small, it's bigger than the people I bump into in Asda or somewhere like that. It's a platform to take my information to the next level. And it's like you said before, you can only do your bit.
Yeah.
My bit is not, at this moment in time, my bit is not to have a flagship radio station and be interviewing people like Max Egan, David Icke, and all these other people who are at my level, digging and chipping away. That's not my thing at the minute. My thing is to actually amass this information, but then put it out there, and people will say, that information's good, that's not too good, that's not what I believe.
It opens the debate, at least. You know,
yes.
I'm really sick of the media never having a real debate.
It's a public debate we want.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. All right, and if we want a public debate, we've got to make the information public, don't you think? And
exactly.
I think that's
exactly
what...
I would say so. I think it's a good idea, that.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? You know. All right, Paul Webster, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, this is an entirely listener-supported broadcast for the time being. So if you support the idea of helping people who do the real work at the coalface get the word out about all different sorts of things that they're doing, so that people can perhaps have some kind of a public debate and actually talk and be informed for a change, unlike mainstream media, then go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com and either donate or start up an automatic payment. All right, there's a business idea that, you know, in those restaurants you go into and they don't tell you what the price of the food is. You pay whatever it is you think that food is worth, and that's the methodology by which you would donate to the show. You're not donating to me, you're not obligating me, you're not paying me to do anything. You're simply saying, Vinny, what you're doing is the right thing, and this is how much I support you in what you're doing for everybody. Okay, that's basically what I'm here to do. I'm a servant, I'm a slave, but I don't have a master. other than my higher self and doing what's right, I'm doing what I feel is the right thing to do. So, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll see you again sometime.
You are the only exception. You are